Good afternoon. My name is Meade Treadwell. I'm your Lieutenant Governor, and I am convening today a hearing on a ballot measure, which will be ballot measure 2, and it's a public hearing on the measure to enact a tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana. And let me just say from the outset at this hearing, this is a very contentious issue in Alaska. We've had 6 other hearings. This is hearing number 7, and we'll have one other in Fairbanks later this week. I'd like to ask people, whichever side of the issue you're on, just try to be as civil as possible to each other. There are people who support this and believe that marijuana is healthy for you, for example, and there's people who oppose this and believe that marijuana is unhealthy for you. And we have some good experts online. We have the state's medical officer, and we've endeavored very hard throughout these hearings. If other issues or studies or comments that you'd like to make available to the public, we will put them up on our state website. We have a number of people online, and we've got, for those listening online, we've got about 15 people here in the room in Bethel. It's a beautiful day in Bethel. And before I get started, I was going to ask state agency people who are online to identify themselves just so people know who's here.
Brandon Spanos with the Department of Revenue Tax Division.
Thank you, Brandon.
Yep. Hi, Lieutenant Governor Bob Beasley with the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board.
Thanks,
Hello,
Bob.
Hello, this is Diane Casto with the Department of Health and Social Services.
Thanks, Diane.
This is Dr. Ward Hurlbert, the Chief Medical Officer of the Department of Health and Social Services.
Thank you, Doctor.
Dennis Casanovas with Alaska State Troopers.
Major Casanovas, thank you. Where did we find you today?
Anchorage today, sir.
Gotcha. Okay. Is there anyone online from DEC? Not as yet. Anyone online from Corrections? Not as yet. And anyone else online from Commerce? So a little bit about how today's hearing will work. This is like a legislative hearing in some respects and different from a legislative hearing in other respects. There are 3 measures that will go on the ballot in November where you, the citizens, are the lawmakers, not the elected representatives, but you, the citizens. Now, what that means is that, first off, we've seen a lot of people criticized lately for not reading legislation. This is a hearing where we're trying to explain the impact of the legislation, and the legislation proposed has got many different facets to it, so we'll have a chance from the pro side and the con side to learn about the legislation and to ask them questions. The next thing that will happen in this hearing happens in many hearings is you may stand up and make an argument for the legislation or against the legislation, and that's your opportunity as well. And then the third thing that often happens in these hearings is that we learn some things about the intent of the legislation, because sometimes if legislation passes, there's court cases later on and they have a question about what the intent was. And these hearings will be kept in the public record as well as any information left out there. I'm going to begin with a summary of the proposed bill, a sectional analysis of the proposed bill, and talk about the cost estimate, and then we'll invite somebody from the pro side, Dr. Tim Hinterberger, who's online, to speak to the bill, and somebody from the con side, and I believe that's Christina Wolston, to speak against the bill, and then Mr. Williams, because you're also chairman of the con side, we'll invite you to speak for the con side if you'd like to do so. And then we have time for testimony or questions by each of you as members of the public. So your questions, you can make your testimony to argue for or against it, as well as questions you may want to put on the record. A summary of this proposed bill. And this is in the handout that we have here. And I just wanted to give notice to the people who are presenting on the pro and con side. The Legislative Information Office here did not have facilities for us to present a PowerPoint presentation, so we are going to have your PowerPoint presentation up on a computer screen in the room. I apologize for not having that here. This bill would tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. It would make use of marijuana legal for persons 21 or older. It would allow them to possess, use, display, purchase, or transport up to 1 ounce of marijuana. It would impose various restrictions on personal cultivation, public use, and operation of marijuana-related facilities. It would allow the legislature to create a marijuana control board in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And it imposes an excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana and provides for the enforcement and administration of that tax. Section 1 of the bill adds a new chapter to Alaska statutes, Alaska Statute 17.38, regulation of marijuana. And the state would provide that the production and sale of marijuana should be regulated and taxed such that businesses could sell marijuana and that such sale would be conducted in a manner that protects consumers and promotes public health and safety. The statute would limit the use, sale, growth, and transport of marijuana to individuals who are 21 years of age or older and imposes penalties for public consumption. The statute would allow for the creation of a marijuana control board while still allowing for local government to make decisions regarding its use and regulation. Section 2 of the bill adds a new chapter, Alaska Statutes 43.61, an excise tax on marijuana, to the Alaska statutes. And this statute would impose a $50 per ounce excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana from a marijuana cultivation facility producer to a retail marijuana store, distributor, or marijuana product manufacturing facility. And the producer would be responsible for paying the tax. The monthly tax statements would be required by the Department of Revenue from each marijuana cultivation facility. And if these taxes are not paid, the facility would be subject to civil penalties under Alaska Statutes 43.05.220. Now, that's the bill, and you can see a copy of the bill up here if anyone wants to read the bill in its entirety. It's right here. And we have an election in early November, first Tuesday in November, and if this bill gets enough votes, I will certify it as law after the election returns are in, probably about middle of November. Sometimes certification lasts longer, but an initiated law becomes effective 90 days after certification. Now, this law, unlike any other laws that the governor that the governor gets to his desk, in this case, this law is not subject to veto, and it may not be repealed by the legislature for up to 2 years, or within 2 years of its effective date, and that's according to Article 11 of our Constitution. And although the legislature may amend an initiative at any time after it's enacted, any amendments made during the first 2 years cannot operate to effectively repeal the initiative by amendment or to vitiate the intent. And there have been several court cases on that particular issue. Now, the other thing the lieutenant governor is required to do when we get an initiative like this that comes to our office is we work with the agencies across the government and we produce a cost estimate on what the cost is of this bill. Now, I should say at the outset, we did not, and this was reported in one of the newspapers, that it was not a political decision not to estimate the amount of revenue the taxes would produce. And the reason why we did not estimate that is because we have no official information on exactly how much marijuana Alaskans use, how much they would use if this becomes legal, how much they would use by acquiring it legally through the system, or how much they might use acquiring it through the way people acquire it now, which is, you know, through an illegal system, or by growing it in their homes. And so we left that speculative number up to the pro side and the con side to make their own arguments on that. We also did not make an estimate of the costs of communities to respond to this bill. And we've heard from some communities that maybe additional training would be necessary at police departments or issues like that. But we did talk to state agencies, and the Department of Revenue estimated that it would need to create at least three new positions to oversee the new excise tax, and that estimated recurring annual cost would be about $300,000. In contractual services, they estimated they would need a one-time expense of $500,000 to configure their tax revenue management systems, and so their one-time cost range for this bill was $350,000 to $500,000 for the first year in configuring that. So the total cost estimate for revenue was $650,000 to $800,000. For the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, if the initiative passes, the responsibility for controlling marijuana will lie with the ABC board. You know the ABC board now is the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. Until or unless a marijuana control board is established by the legislature within DCCED. And as was done with Colorado, the department recommends the creation of a task force to identify legal, policy, and procedural issues that need to be resolved. And from creating a database to purchasing vehicles, the estimated cost to create a task force is $1.5 million for the first year, $1.4 million for the second year. So a first-year cost estimate would be $1.5 million at the Department of Commerce. You can see detailed other parts of the cost estimate in this document available up here at the front desk. The Department of Health and Social Services said its estimate of new costs would be between $0 and $2.9 million, depending on a number of factors. The Department of Public Safety, and you have representatives from both Health and Social Services and Public Safety online today, estimates about $1.4 million in additional costs. Part of that being that the Department of Public Safety, which is involved in one kind of enforcement now, which is to go after street vendors, as it were, of marijuana, and might also have the additional job of keeping Alaskan-based marijuana from leaving the state. The Department of Environmental Conservation oversees food safety. And food safety, if marijuana is made into products that are edibles, such as brownies or candies or sodas, the Department of Health, the Health Department part of the Department of Environmental Conservation would be setting that. And one of the questions that has been asked in these hearings that I can just pass on is we're not sure yet whether it would be the ABC board or DEC that would try to set some sort of standard on labeling for potency if marijuana is made legal, for example. So those are the kinds of questions that the task force might address. Finally, the University of Alaska came back with an indeterminate estimate on their costs for implementing this measure. So with that, what I'd like to do is invite Dr. Tim Hinterberger to present on the pro side on behalf of the sponsors, and then Christina Wolston to present on the negative side. We have a slideshow here, and Michaela, anything we can do to make that more visible to the entire room, the better. And I apologize for the fact you have it, but I will tell you that both the pro and the con side have very articulate speakers. So with that, Dr. Hinterberger, are you available to begin?
Yes, Lieutenant Governor, thank you. I'll try to do my best
here.
The PowerPoint, I hope you can see it. So I'll be giving some instructions to do quite a bit of clicking. Hope that's not annoying. So again, I'm Tim Hinterberger. I'm chair of the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. Next slide. I would like to start out by reminding everyone why it is that marijuana is illegal in the U.S. in the first place. This goes back nearly 80 years, of course, so I hope you're looking at the slide now. It says marijuana prohibition was based on nothing but lies and racism, and that is actually the case. The figure there, the image of Harry Anslinger, essentially our first drug czar, and a quote, marijuana leads to pacifism and communist brainwashing. If you click again, you'll see he also said the primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races. So bear in mind that the reason marijuana is illegal is not because it was the cause of any great amount of violent crime or really any other problems. It was simply a way to crack down on people that the government didn't like. Next slide. myth and propaganda live on in Alaska in the Big Marijuana, Big Mistake campaign. And click to see examples, and we'll just click through these. Our opposition likes to focus on outsiders, talking about our funder in Washington, D.C., and they ignore the local roots of our campaign. I'll show you some images of a lot of our local supporters in a minute here. Click again. They argue that marijuana is more dangerous than alcohol. Again, we make a big point of saying that alcohol is more dangerous, and we think that having alcohol being legally available and regulated sets a standard by which we have to judge any other substance. Click again. They suggest that legalization of marijuana will lead to large increases in its use, especially among teens. We believe that the evidence suggests that this is not the case. Click again. Our opposition has been wildly exaggerating the harms of marijuana concentrates. Click again. They claim that the initiative will lead to, quote, aggressive advertising. We believe that there's very easy ways to control the advertising of marijuana in Alaska. Click again. They claim that the initiative will lead to the marketing of child-friendly edibles. Again, there's no reason to believe that we can't control this quite thoroughly. And again, click again. They represent the initiative's local option. As we'll talk about, there are limits to what we can constitutionally control via initiative, via this initiative. Okay, next slide. The campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol is a local grassroots effort, and this slide has pictures of a lot of the leaders and supporters of our campaign. I'm the person top row, second left. And click again, and that reminds us that not only these individuals, but over 40,000 Alaskans signed this petition. So to say that this is some sort of outside-run campaign is simply not true. Click next slide. Ballot Measure 2 will be positive for Alaska. It will regulate marijuana like alcohol. We chose this way to describe the campaign because regulating something like alcohol is a concept that Alaskans are familiar with. It includes, for instance, the notion that higher concentration forms of a substance can be subject to somewhat more stringent regulation, and we hope to adopt this same approach for marijuana. Click again. There's a 9-month rulemaking process built into the initiative, and the claim that we're rushing into this and that we won't have time to be guided by what's going on in Colorado and Washington is simply not true. Click again. Advertising will be banned. The initiative, as I'll show you, has plenty of room for that to occur. Another click. Child-friendly edibles will be banned. And click again. Managing the industry through a regulated business environment will put an end to black market sales. Our opposition likes to claim that black market, the underground marijuana market, is still thriving in Colorado. This may be, there may be some of this still going on, but I encourage you to think about in the long run, how a black market could possibly survive in the presence of a regulated market with appropriate levels of taxation. Just think. When was the last time that you saw anybody selling mason jars of moonshine? All that business has been displaced by a regulated alcohol market. Okay, next slide, marijuana versus alcohol. Again, trying to make the point as clearly as we can that by any standard, marijuana is a safer substance for people to use compared to alcohol, and we simply see no reason why responsible adults should be prevented from choosing a safer substance. And in fact, if marijuana were legally available, it's entirely possible that fewer people would abuse alcohol or they would reduce their consumption of alcohol, and that would have to be a good thing. Next slide. Rulemaking will be done by a state agency. So this line from the initiative again, says that the ABC board shall adopt regulations necessary for implementation of this initiative. There will be lots of opportunity for citizens and potential business owners to contribute to the rulemaking. Next slide. Regulation will make marijuana less accessible to minors. Requirements to prevent the sale and or diversion of marijuana and marijuana products to persons under the age of 21 will be required. And again, we think that it's important to remember that this is a big part of the benefit of regulating marijuana like alcohol. As I'm sure you've heard us say before, underage students always say that it is easier for them to get marijuana currently than it is for them to get alcohol. And that's because the people who sell alcohol have a vested interest in keeping it out of the hands of kids. And we want that same rationale to apply to marijuana. Next slide. State regulators can control packaging, labeling, dosage, and any other aspect of marijuana products. Labeling requirements for marijuana and marijuana products sold or distributed by a marijuana establishment will be subject to quite stringent regulation. And there's no reason to think that this could be successfully challenged in the courts. By the same token, next slide, advertising can be banned. Reasonable restriction on advertising will be in effect. There's no reason to think that we can't make this work. Next slide. Local control is an important part of ballot measure two. A local government may prohibit the operation of marijuana cultivation facilities, marijuana product manufacturing facilities, testing facilities, and retail stores through ordinance or voter initiative. Our opposition has pointed out several times that the initiative does not prohibit the possession or transport of marijuana, and that is because personal possession of marijuana has been ruled by the Alaska Supreme Court to be constitutionally protected. So if we were to attempt to restrict possession through local control, that would be unconstitutional and could not be part of the initiative. The initiative would have been thrown out. The intent of this is to apply the option of local control to any sort of government, municipality, whether incorporated or unincorporated, anywhere in Alaska. Next slide. Again, very important for many Alaskans is that marijuana will become more available as medicine for those who really need it. We've had a medical marijuana law on the books for quite some time now, and this slide shows a story about that that was recently on TV. Unfortunately, because we don't have medical dispensaries or any other regulated way for people to obtain it, it's very difficult for many patients unless they're able to grow it on their own, which many people simply aren't. So this initiative will be a big boon to many medical users. Next slide says regulation works, so click again. Regulation is working in Colorado. Here we see some quotes by an officer of the Colorado Department of Revenue Marijuana Enforcement. A point of contention between our two sides over how well marijuana regulation is working in Colorado, but I think there's pretty clear evidence that, as he says, the sky hasn't fallen, and they're moving forward with their regulatory model. Next slide is more about this. Regulation is working in Colorado. A poll taken earlier this month found that a majority of adult Colorado residents think it is working and they back the law. Next slide, regulations work in Colorado. The Brookings Institution, a very mainstream political analysis organization, reported earlier this summer that Colorado's policy, its implementation of their new law, has been largely successful. Click again to see some more of the quote. Decisions there are being made in concert with a wide variety of stakeholders in the state. And I saw that just this week there are additional regulations being implemented in Colorado, which will further refine and control the dosage and packaging of marijuana products there. So there's a good example we can follow, close cooperation between government and industry to make this work. Next slide, a quote from the New York Times reminding us that crime has not gone up, as some people claim and some people predicted. in Colorado. Next slide. Monthly marijuana tax revenues double. This shows that the revenue being accumulated in Colorado from marijuana taxation is increasing, and currently they are on track to come very close to the initial estimates of $30 million a year. So there's real money there. And as Lieutenant Governor said earlier, it's very difficult to estimate the kind of revenue that will be generated in Alaska. Our opposition has been using a very low number, $5 million. There was a report out by an independent group of economists last week that pegged it substantially higher for Alaska. Next slide. Regulation is working.
Dr. Hinderberger, we're coming close. You passed the 10-minute mark.
I'm ready to wrap it up.
You want
to
jump? Yeah.
Okay. No, that's very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Christina Wilson, would you like to speak on the con side, and can you identify your organization, please?
Hi, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. My name is Christina Wilson. I'm the volunteer spokesperson for Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, Vote No on 2.
Okay, and we're pulling up your slideshow now.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. If you could start on slide 2, and I'm going to skip a number of them. I think Tim and I have you know, been through this a number of times. I heard from somebody on previous ballot measures that we could probably give each other's presentation by the end of it, which is probably true. So slide 2 is just a look at some of the statewide organizations and groups that have come together with some questions around ballot measure 2, some concerns, the way that we as Alaskans view the our obligation to fulfill the law that was passed a number of years ago, legalizing medical marijuana, and we do believe that we need to come together around a solution. But we think that Alaskans should come together with that solution and with that fix around that law. These are all organizations, more than 30 of them, and this doesn't list all of them, that do believe there are some serious concerns with the way ballot measure 2 is written today, and that we should vote this down. The reason we do have concern, if you go to slide 3, around this outside influence and this outside money is on this slide. The executive director of the Marijuana Policy Project has said that while most people don't care about Alaska, everyone seems to agree that we cannot afford to lose a statewide legalization vote just 2 years after the twin victories in Colorado and Washington. We absolutely must win in Alaska, lest reporters declare the legalization movement to be backsliding. And this is an important point because this is not really about Alaskans. And they have, you know, the campaign has said they will do and spend whatever it takes to win. And we feel that Alaskans should really be in control of this conversation and how it impacts our state. And we're not just part of this national strategy that the Marijuana Policy Project has identified. Almost entirely, 100% of the funds in this campaign come from this organization. And we should all ask some questions about what their intentions are for our state. If you go to slide 4, there are some significant concerns around the way the ballot measure was written. The definition of marijuana includes every compound, manufacture, salt, derivative, mixture, resin, including marijuana concentrates. Marijuana accessories means any equipment, products, materials for basically introducing it into the human body. And then finally, the definition of marijuana products means concentrated marijuana products and products that are comprised of marijuana and other ingredients and not limited to edible products, et cetera. And I think it is it's wishful thinking to say that I think I heard Mr. Hinderberger say that we would ban edibles that are in packaging that are appealing to children, that we would ban advertising. That certainly is not the case in Colorado. And as the Lieutenant Governor mentioned, we do have a significant amount of protection around the way ballot measures are written. It would violate the nature of a statewide ballot measure to change these to effectively repeal them. So the way that this was written, and it was crafted after the Colorado ballot measure, you know, on behalf of the Marijuana Policy Project, should give us great concern because there is a lot of protection around this language. And certainly in Colorado, they have not been able to ban advertising. It is a bit of a free-for-all, as you'll see in a couple slides, as well as the edible products. The next slide. This is the nature of the industry. These are concentrates, and they're almost 100% THC, and these are completely legal in Colorado, and they would be completely legal in Alaska. To say that we could emit some of these products, this is a commercial industry that we're talking about coming to Alaska, and their intent is to get Alaskans to buy more because it's a profitable industry for them. And so these are all products that are part of the retail industry. If you go to slide 6, this is just an example of how it's made. They use butane fuel and grain alcohol to basically concoct this chemical mixture, which, as you saw on the slide before, is almost nearly pure THC, and this would be legal to manufacture in Alaska as well as sell in and transport in Alaska as well. If you go to slide 7, these are pictures of the products that are for sale in Colorado. The Hershey's company is actually suing the maker of the product in the top middle. And these are, you know, we're here to just present the reality of the industry. This is what is being sold. These are what are being marketed. This is what's advertised. They're incredibly confusing to kids. They're very juvenile. And these are products that could and would be available in Alaska. These are marijuana edible displays in Colorado. The packaging is very confusing, and there is not a lot of question or not a lot of clarification here that this is actually a drug, and so it's very difficult for consumers to tell. If you go to slide 9, this is an example of the type of advertising that's taken place in Colorado. The top right is a full-page ad in the Denver Post. There are Valpak ads and other advertising. They have folks, you know, outdoors on the street, much like we do, the Liberty Tax guy dancing in Midtown Anchorage. And because this is it's a commercial industry, and if we legalize a commercial industry in Alaska, there's really not a lot that you can do to prohibit the advertising and the marketing for that business. If you go to slide 10, the bottom left-hand corner is a Google search of the pot shops in Denver, and there are now more pot shops than pharmacies and liquor stores. The next slide is we feel that this is a big challenge for our communities. I understand how the law reads. I understand that it is legal to possess up to 4 ounces and transport up to an ounce in Alaska. But the concern for our communities is you couldn't ban the manufacturing, advertising, marketing, transport, consumption, in Alaska. And this applies to our rural communities as well, and you could not apply the same applications that you do for alcohol. When we look at because marijuana has had a variety of stages of legalization and then a reversal of those measures over time. And we like to look at much more modern statistics and trends than maybe Mr. Hinterberger had referred to almost 80 years ago. But when you look at the legalization of marijuana and the perception, particularly on our youth, of its risk, there's some significant data that shows that youth perceive it as safe when you legalize it, and their perception of risk goes down and their use goes up. And if you go to slide 13, there's a long-term, years-long study done in Colorado after just the legalization of medical marijuana and the introduction of medical dispensaries on the impact of youth use in Colorado. And what they've shown is that there was an increase of 25%, 8.92% to 10.37% in Colorado of youth ages 12 to 17. If you go to slide 15, I skipped a couple there. If you look at workplace productivity, Alaska is a pretty busy place, and we already have the highest compensation costs for workers, the highest costs in workers' compensation in the nation. A concern for all of our communities and for our law enforcement and for businesses is that there's no appropriate standards and testing available for marijuana, so there's really no way to ensure our workforce is safe, ready, and productive. There are statistics long-term about the users. When you legalize a substance, as the New England Journal of Medicine says, use goes up because it becomes more accessible, available, and used, and so the use goes up, and so the presence of injuries and absenteeism in the workforce is an unintended consequences of this. And this is from the Journal of American Medical Association. If you look at slide 16, this is a reference to the revenues, and we have an opportunity to really look at Colorado, and there is a number of unintended consequences that have happened there, and we have the ability to really learn. And even the governor of Colorado has said that, you know, it's a good opportunity for other states to learn. But Alaska has 7 times fewer people than Colorado. We also do not have the same driving opportunity to our state for tourists to purchase marijuana, and a significant amount of the revenue in Colorado is based upon that. Given the fact that our tax rate, our excise tax rate, would be higher, there is a reasonable calculation that the revenues to Alaska would be quite low. You know, we can reasonably expect, you know, 7 times less than Colorado based upon the calculations of just our population. And they've been severely they have really under-realized the revenue that Coloradans were told when they were sent to the polling places. They were told up to $100 million in annual tax revenue. Slide 17, the folks that are on the street working in law enforcement have said that it's done nothing more than enhance the opportunity for the black market because you can get it tax-free on the corner. So I think that we need to just look at it from a reasonable standpoint of what happens when you look at the monetary versus the accessibility. And since it's available everywhere and it's legal and you can't tell if you get it from a dealer or from a pot shop, it's really very difficult to control. And the last one is, you know, recently in these hearings, we've heard a lot about Alaskans and incarceration. And what we've learned is that any Alaskan that is incarcerated for marijuana possession charge would still be incarcerated for other crimes that are more serious than that. So we do welcome an honest discussion about that. We welcome all of the data that we can get so that we as Alaskans can make an educated vote. And the last thing, I guess, is that the movement is backsliding nationwide, and we do believe because there are some unintended consequences in Colorado. If you go to slide 20, it's the last one. The youth use is up in Colorado based upon that long-term study. The crime rate is up in Denver. Another unintended consequence is the homelessness population has increased 25% in Denver by reports from shelters and other organizations in Denver. So we do look to Colorado, and we believe that Alaskans should have some questions, and we have the opportunity to learn, and we as Alaskans should come together for our own solution and not rely on an outside organization. Thank you. Hello?
Hello?
I'm sorry, we got all that. Let's now open up the hearing to testimony, and what I'm going to do is invite you to, if you'd like to testify, to come up and sit here and address the audience. And in some cases, I know you'd like to bring an interpreter with you, and so we have 2 seats here. Michael, if you would like to join us up here as a representative of the no side, you're very welcome to be here. I was going to invite John Phillip up first to testify, as he was the first to sign in.
I will be translating for John Phillip. He is more comfortable in the Yupik language, and I will do my best to translate word for word.
Au lukah kaka piu nai liput hong kuta maani piu nai sikokuluta khani akka khani yu ngamta tali su chet pugil gait piu na jaknak skit kon kuta mai tang bagluki fasu atokuluki tosu yok kaput kon kuta yuput yum tai yut agan kasugnak khamanna nuttan tamun nacht nani ayakuni agan kasukti khukut khonkuta khassutai makhani pillak stikkai tauluk stikkai agan qililutun yungaitut yunaisik namattum khani atus khatam gikun qinngitok ikuk likuk Hangu yaktum su mai nasun ritah putman nakhani yuk pituk larakan ku mikut kenaku khani agmat ku luku pitto. To sikha nuttan samu nakht kenani mannata ayakuni piu naskit nakhskha. Bila cakuk unnom khani ayu kutik suh tikhput. Kasukan kita angay kulgan kani ang nixay tukut kasutay makalak tukut yusak put soksu tapitik tuku akatakum tunak tukut takum tuyus put kani yus putem yum nixu ila yunay tako. Tam koyal ganga mai khani challa kutchen umyong chautkh putkhang kuta man khani piu nasket nakh kuin khlugap qit tamana auluk staisu khang kuta Saya gadik lara putrani atanum tun. Tama natalil rit binimuk umyohtumuk. Ayu kucing skamtun kwangkutun panikan rutuk sakait. Pikcus kumaluku. Kim tasupif kenata nani sununani asani kwani. Sam milloni tama na khani kai gani kayun uk foksuku pekami tukhani soksuni ayala tukatanum tapisku taat chetum.
Thank you. His name is John Phelps. He's an elder from Akiak, and he really appreciates this opportunity to testify on this issue. We have had problems and more problems in our communities have risen in recent times. Our focus should be to work on these issues that are bad for us. We will if we do not identify those bad things, we will have more trouble. As we all know that our people have been suffering from all of these issues in the past, and if we do not talk these things through, that we will suffer more in our communities. And right now, I think with this, with the issue that John brought up, is that we as parents, we will be suffering more, and we should not add any more to our troubles, right now, because we have so many issues. And with this issue of marijuana, we should not rush into this. We need to look at all the truth, and we need to really make sure that that we make the right choices with the truth. He wants to reiterate that he really thanks all of you to talk about this issue that is before us, and it has come to us, and it did not initiate from us. It has come to us, like other issues have been. But I think we need to talk about these issues very carefully, and with this issue, his biggest concern is the impact that it's going to have on the children, and if you know, we need to be very careful in making those decisions when. You know, we make these decisions that affect our lives. And again, he really appreciates the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Our next speaker, and just for the information of those listening in, we normally have 3 minutes, and I did not want to cut off an elder. And Mike, thank you very much for translating. And we have 3 minutes. You also may, as part of your testimony, ask questions. And if the response to the questions takes longer than 3 minutes, so be it. Our next person who signed up to testify is Elizabeth Lake, also from Akiak. And I understand you came by boat today. Elizabeth, welcome.
I hope I make myself clear if I talk, Governor Treadwell, people. I'm against marijuana smoking because it's not very good. Besides alcohol being toxic, it's dangerous for children whose parents smoke. The children I observed last week at school, if they have FAS, ADHD, trait, they tend to be not sitting still, they move around. If they get sugar high, more move. And parents should realize it's not good to smoke, because at school last week, I observed some children, get angry very easily, and it's giving the teachers hard time control them. So you should think about not legalizing marijuana. It's bad for the health. The people who smoke marijuana forget easily. Very easily. And you should consider quitting for the sake of their children. And people who smoke marijuana, those people who smoke marijuana don't work, they're unemployed. If you have a craving for marijuana, you break into business establishment so you can smoke and you end up in jail. That's not very nice. How many minutes, Pat?
You've got 1 minute left.
That's all I can say.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions for the experts online, either the pro side, the con side, or any of the scientists or government people?
Have you ever observed children at school? How is that affecting marijuana? Is that affecting children at school?
Dr. Herbert, would you like to try an answer to that question?
Could you repeat the question, please?
The question is, do you have any studies that have observed the effect of marijuana on children at school, effect on learning or memory?
Yes, sir, Lieutenant Governor. The studies are posted on your website, but the studies show impairment in IQ, which is lifelong lasting. It shows impaired ability to do the cognitive studies, the math, and the other studies there. It shows a reduction in grade level, fairly substantial evidence supported by high grade evidence there. This is an article from Pediatric News Daily, cannabis use in teens linked to lower educational attainment and increased suicide risk. So it has pretty negative impacts on the kids and their educational experience.
Okay, thank you. And I would remind those listening that the law before us does not propose to make marijuana available to children in the age group that are in school, but those studies are available on the website. From the pro side or the con side, would you like to comment at all? Hearing none. Thank you very much for your questions.
One more. I was very surprised last week to see a marijuana pill form. That's bad. Very bad.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Next, Lenora Galila. If I've mispronounced your name, Lenora, I apologize.
I'm against the bill because.
Could you speak up more loudly? My parents used to always tell me to not talk so loudly because I could be heard in Bethel, and now here we are in Bethel, and I need you to speak more loudly so you could be heard in Anchorage.
Oh. I'm against it because there's already a lot of trouble with alcohol in our village, and I've seen some people in our village who smoke too much to where they couldn't walk home. And there are some people that black out when they overdo it. And I had a question to the people that smoke when they're pregnant. Do they have any, they call it defects?
Dr. Herbert, this question is, are there any effects on children who are born of pregnant women who smoke marijuana that are known?
Let me see. I did submit something on that, and I have a couple of articles, one of which shows that the babies of moms who have used marijuana are depressed initially, but that seemed to be gone in about a month there.
By the way, while you're looking, I should just say that his studies plus studies provided by the CONSIDE and others' testimony are available at notice.alaska.gov. There's a banner at the top of the website to click on there.
Okay. Oh, this is Tim Hinterberger. I wonder if I could just jump in real quick and help Dr. Hurlburt help him find the words concisely. There are no known birth defects attributable to marijuana use. Thank you.
Are you guys sure about that?
That's the scientific consensus as I've read it. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Dr. Hurlburt. I would agree. I have not seen anything in the literature that talks about anatomic birth defects on babies born to moms who are using it. It's more the impact, the depression on the brain, but not the anatomic defects. I would agree with what he said.
Actually, that's not what I said. I said there are no known birth defects, and I'm not aware of any psychological defects attributable to marijuana use either. Thank you.
Okay. And if I can just ask some, marijuana does go through the blood-brain barrier, you know, in the user. Does Dr. Hurlburt and Dr. Hinterberg, you may want to comment on this. Does it is it blocked from the fetus, or does it circulate through the fetus if it's in the bloodstream of the mother?
It's not, and I have what I was looking for. This is the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime report. Talks about cannabis and pregnancy. It says cannabis use during pregnancy may cause harm to the fetus. However, associations that have been reported are subject to confounding variables, particularly because cannibal users are more likely to use tobacco, alcohol, or other illicit drugs. It goes on and says, nevertheless, animal studies have shown that rats exposed to THC in utero show difficulty with learning and memory tasks, as well as structural and functional changes in the hippocampus. In women, cannabis smoking during pregnancy leads to decreased birth weight, most likely due to the effects of carbon monoxide from smoking marijuana. Additionally, infants exposed to cannabis in utero show developmental delays in the visual system, as well as tremors shortly after birth, though these differences appear to subside after 1 month. Older children have some deficits in higher cognitive processes. So that was what I was looking for related to pregnancy.
Thank you. Nora, thank you for your time. Elizabeth Ivan, also here from Akiak. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is.
Please speak loudly.
My name is Elizabeth Ivan, and I'm from Akiak, and I worked as an ISAP counselor, and I recently moved from being an ISAP counselor to a wellness counselor, and I've done my research on alcohol abuse and also on marijuana abuse as well as other substances, and I'm against the legalization of marijuana, and the reason being is because with what I understand, the last 20 years I've seen people who smoke marijuana, and that's just the joints that they've been using. I've seen just a few people using bongs. I've witnessed their psychotic disorder in the last 20 years, and my concern is the way they've been smoking it, the THC level isn't going to compare what they've been using the last 20 years compared to what it is now, 100% THC level, and that concerns me because someone who's been smoking for the last 20 years, if I've compared them to somebody who's been sober for the last 20 years, when they're faced with some kind of conflict, the people who smoke marijuana have had behavioral issues, even if they're sober, and it's because of the effect of marijuana. And if they're going to legalize marijuana, the THC level will go higher in marijuana and in the users. And imagine the kind of psychotic disorders we're going to have to deal with in these days if it is legalized. And comparing marijuana to alcohol doesn't make any sense. Both of those substances are not safe, not even in any quantity. And that's the reason that I oppose the legalization of marijuana. And I just hope what I've said to you, you know, will sink into you, especially for the ones that are for legalizing marijuana, because it just doesn't make sense to do it, especially when our kids are at hand. And just yesterday we buried somebody, and that's really sad, and that's because of alcohol, even if it isn't legal in our villages, even if it's legal in Bethel. That's the kind of impact we're dealing with, and marijuana isn't safe, not any amount. So,
okay.
And I did have questions.
Yes.
I was going to ask, if it did become legal, I was hoping and I was wondering right now, if you have children and you're drinking alcohol, you can be charged with OCS can come and take your kids away if your kids are in danger. And I was wondering if the same thing will be happening with marijuana once it gets legalized.
That's a good question. And I also want to take this opportunity to clarify the local option issue as well. Online, in terms of the OCS issue, is there anyone here from Health and Social Services besides Dr. Hurlburt who might be able to speak to that?
Lieutenant Governor, this is Diane Casto, and I'm with Department of Health and Social Services Behavioral Health. What I would say to that is that's certainly an issue that I've seen a number of articles about talking what the kind of what ifs. And similar to alcohol, it would be the same if the child is put into a dangerous situation based on the parent's use of an inability to care for their child. Or in the case of, I know there have been some situations in Colorado recently where children have, young children have gotten access to marijuana products in the home. And so, again, that would be an endangerment issue if the parents are not carefully keeping the products out of the reach of their children. So it would be very similar to alcohol in that just the use itself would not constitute an endangerment, but the excessive use and the ability to not be able to take care of your children or put your children in danger would result in OCS the same as it does for alcohol.
Those are all I had.
Thank you. And while you're here, you mentioned that alcohol is not legal in Bethel and not legal in...
No, it is legal in Bethel. You can buy it. But in the villages, there are certain villages where there's dry villages and it's not legal.
Okay. And so, Dr. Henneberger, can you explain the local control options in your proposed bill?
Sure. Yeah, once again, the initiative offers local governments, and again, that can be any kind of local government, incorporated, unincorporated, recognized village, whatever it's referred to as, will allow that entity the option either by citizen initiative or by, assembly action to prohibit the production, processing, and sale of marijuana or marijuana products within that area. Again, we could not attempt to prohibit personal possession in the home because that right has already been recognized as protected in the Alaska Constitution.
And have you looked at tribal authority in this? Could a tribal authority prevent the possession of marijuana in a community if it wanted to keep the village marijuana free?
Don't know. I'm sorry, I'm not a legal authority. I don't know where tribal overlaps with governmental in this area. So I think that's beyond my expertise to answer adequately. I don't know. Are there tribes recognized in Alaska? I'm just not sure about that.
Yeah, tribes are recognized in Alaska, but and in some cases, issues dealing with adoptions, the issue of what shows up in a tribal criminal court is limited here compared to other states, but depending on the rules of the tribe as well.
Yeah. Okay. No.
In our tribe, alcohol is illegal. They cannot import it. And the tribal police officers have the right to confiscate the booze that they try to get. But because of the local option law, they can have it in their home. So that sort of doesn't make sense either. If tribal says no, and then local option says it can have it in their home. So somewhere along the line, secretly, they'll have to import the alcohol in order for to have it in their home. So a lot of things just don't make sense.
Thank you very much. Our next next speaker is Michael Williams, speaking on his on behalf of his apparent.
Yes, good afternoon, Lieutenant Governor Treadwell. Thank you for the opportunity, and I'd like to thank Ogotaramit Native Council for us to conduct business here in their home ground, and welcome to our region. And I just wanted to say why I chose not to support the initiative. It is too extreme, and we have not prepared ourselves in our communities, and although we have been dealing with the issues of historical trauma that our people went through over the years, with massive deaths from the first contact when our people with other diseases, and there were mass graves in our villages, and it was highly populated in this area, and now we're still trying to recover from that era after the first contact was made. And then alcohol came in as well. And we have, many people have died, including six of my brothers. And that is one thing that that is painful. And we're still dealing with not just my own family, but with all the families throughout the region, and with the issue that is before us, and alcohol is has really impacted us, and then and marijuana, of course, is not safer than alcohol. And it just affects the brain development of our young people, and also it poses, health problems along the way. And if all of the people would discuss this issue like we have been doing that this all summer long with our four villages, we have been discussing the issue of alcohol and marijuana, and how to deal with these issues. And we have initiated an intertribal agreement between our tribes in four close knit villages that we are going to deal with the issue of alcohol prohibited from our communities, and to deal with those issues with search and initiate our tribal governments and our tribal courts to deal with these issues directly, because we can't afford to lose any more people. The highest suicide rates in the world is here. The highest domestic violence that I know of is here in our region. And I think we need to deal with those issues and with this initiative. We feel that it is too extreme and we should not rush into this. We should take a look at this and see what's happening in Colorado and state of Washington and make thoughtful decision in Alaska to make sure that that our local governments will not end up paying for this, and our young people will not be put at risk, and the health of our people put at risk. So we need to take a look at this to take a look at all the issues before we make the decision to vote. So right now, my clear position is no.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for the experts online?
The issue of suicide, we have 14 times more, you know, the rate of suicide in our region, among our people here. Does marijuana enhance the suicide attempts or suicidal thoughts?
Dr. Herbert, would you like to answer that? Have you seen any studies on that issue?
Yes. This was from Pediatric News, September 9th, just earlier this month. What it says, individuals using cannabis on a daily basis before the age of 17 years are significantly less likely to complete high school, obtain a degree, significantly more likely to be cannabis dependent, use other illicit drugs, and attempt suicide by age 30 years. And this was a result of a meta-analysis. This means looking at various articles from the literature. That's one of the references that I have.
Okay, and is that one that's posted on our site, or do we need to post that one?
I don't believe that one is, and I can send that in.
Okay. One more. And just a question on that, and then I'll call on Dr. Hinterberger. I know that suicide is closely linked with depression. Is regular marijuana use linked with depression, or do you see was there any other causal factor that was looked at there? Dr. Herbert?
On the suicide?
Yeah.
This was, it said that they're on this significantly more likely to be cannabis dependent, mean addicted to dependence, and that they are also more likely to use other illegal drugs. So it didn't separate those out. It gave that as a factor leading to the increased suicide risk, but it said those same individuals were also more at risk of using other drugs.
Okay. Dr. Hinterberger?
Yes, thank you. I simply like to stress that the report Dr. Herbert is reading is simply a correlational study. There is no reason to think that marijuana causes suicide. As I've said before, people who are depressed are more likely to abuse marijuana. People who are depressed are also more likely to commit suicide. There is no causal link. as long as I'm on the line, I would like to ask Mr. Williams one question. He stated that, I believe he said, quote, of course marijuana is more harmful or more dangerous than alcohol. And I'd simply like to ask him what is his basis for claiming that.
Well, I think the basis that I'm looking at that is the brain development of the young children, and also the behavioral health that Liz Lake raised earlier in our young children, and the behavior and the damage that would have been done to these children, that will have a long-term effect on the children. So, so I believe that both substances are harmful to our way of life, and as we've seen these substances coming into our communities in our villages and alcohol, and now this marijuana, I think both will harm us.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Christina. Can I ask a quick question?
Sure, yes. Sure. If you're willing to answer, sure, go ahead.
Oh, it was actually for the medical professionals. I'm not sure what kind of a doctor Dr. Hinterberger is, but maybe he would like to answer too, also Dr. Hurlburt. In the definition of marijuana, is it listed as a stimulant or a depressant?
Well, this is Tim Hinterberger. It really doesn't fall into either category.
Based upon what science, I guess, what studies do we have to support that?
Well, look up any pharmacology text. I don't know. I don't have something off the top of my head.
Okay, yeah.
We'd be happy to post a further answer on that if either side has that. Michael, you had one other question.
Yes, one question about the local option law. In our four communities, we have imposed through an intertribal agreement between the sovereign tribal governments, which the sovereign tribal governments have government-to-government relationship with the federal government, whereas the state of Alaska does not recognize the existence of our tribes. And our tribes have been litigating the issues of children and the issue of tribal courts in Alaska, and we have for the best interest of our children and our communities, we have initiated those. The issue of alcohol and other substances, the four villages have signed an intertribal agreement to not allow alcohol, and we would prosecute them through our tribal courts. And we have initiated conversations we would talk about adjudicating the misdemeanors, and I think in our tribal court symposium in Fairbanks with the Attorney General Ferghetti initiated this agreement between the tribes to deal with these issues at the local level. But Akiak is the native village of Akiak is ready to do whatever it can to protect our women and children and everyone there living. And that is our charge as tribal officials there. So we're hoping to, work with the other agencies that can help us and to improve the quality of life and to save lives and to have healthy communities. And that is our overall goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Ray Watson from Bethel forward.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Ray.
My name is Ray Watson. For the record, I wear many hats. I work at a treatment center here in Bethel for pretty close to 25 years now. And so my opinion is somewhat just based on my experience at the treatment center there. I wanted to say that as in early 1990s, you know, what we were dealing with back then was alcohol and marijuana. And what we recognized with patients that were in the aftercare component, that they, when they used marijuana, that was a prelude to relapse with the alcohol, because at some point in their use, they would find themselves without that substance, and so seek the alcohol. And often they admitted to that. In dealing with marijuana, as a counselor some years back, I had to look for ways to help people, to help the people recognize their own addictions. Of course, marijuana is one of those that sometimes can be very challenging to self-internalize and self-diagnose yourself. But there's one simple question you can ask yourself, whether it be alcohol, whether it be marijuana. And this simple question will tell you if you have a problem or not. And I'm just wondering if either the doctors know what that is, that question.
So that's a question for Dr. Hurlburt and Dr. Hinterberger. And Dr. Hinterberger, you may want to – actually, I'll ask both of you to explain your credentials. But the question is, what question does a person ask themselves to know whether or not they're addicted? Is that the question, right? Okay. Dr. Hurlburt?
Sure. And this as this issue has been coming up, not just here in Alaska – nationally, and as I hear about it from my counterparts with other states, I've tried to do a lot of reading this past year. And to be honest, a year ago, I was not convinced in my own mind that marijuana was physically addicting, as alcohol is, as some of the other drugs, both the legal controlled substances and illegal drugs. But the literature is very clear that marijuana is physically addicting. And what that means is if you use it and you become addicted, that you have physical symptoms when you try to stop that. Now, just like somebody that gets DTs from alcoholism, it's terrible to go through. You have to medically manage it, but you can get them through it, and they can become sober and can get over and control their alcoholism. We would still always say they're an alcoholic. They would testify to that, that they do do this. So you do have physical symptoms of withdrawal, the agitation, the discomfort, the feeling that you need to have that. And the rates are that if you initially use marijuana in adolescence, about 1 in 6 or 16% of people that try it will become physically addicted. If you use it at all later on, the rates would be about 1 in 10, which is about the same as it would be with alcohol, to become physically addicted. If a person uses marijuana pretty much on a daily basis, like smoking one joint a day, between 25% and 50% of people become addicted. And that's those are based on reports from the National Institute of Drug Abuse, and also the United Nations Office of Drug and Crime. I did find one other article. This was an abstract from the Journal of Perinatology on the exposure during pregnancy, and talks about the negative effect on fetal growth, on periods of brain development, particularly during fetal and adolescent period, propensity to significantly adverse and neurodevelopmental and behavioral outcomes. That was something I didn't have before, but that's what addiction is. And from my reading, I've really changed my mind and become convinced that just like the other substances, that marijuana is physically addicting.
Thank you. I just wanted to add.
And let's just ask Dr. Herberger to respond as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Excuse me. Like Dr. Hurlburt, I don't have any direct experience treating patients, and reading the literature, I would have to argue quite strongly with his interpretation. Marijuana is not considered anywhere near as addictive as alcohol or many other substances that are commonly used. Physical symptoms of withdrawal he referred to are extremely rare, nowhere near the one in nine or whatever number he said occurs. So there are people who experience vague symptoms when they stop using. These are people who have used extensively for a long time. And from what I've read, marijuana so-called withdrawal is much more similar to what people experience when they quit drinking coffee, for instance, if they've been drinking it for a long time.
Dr. Hindenberger, thank you. The Lieutenant Governor asked for our credentials. I am a physician. I'm board certified in public health, a state public health officer, and also spent a long career as a surgeon, and certainly saw many individuals with problems related to marijuana use, related to alcohol use during my career there. And the data, although I understand and I respect your disagreement there, the data that I have quoted come from the National Institutes of Health and the National Institute for Data for Drug Abuse, which to me is a pretty credible, pretty solid source of information.
Actually, those two agencies have an interest in promoting the war on drugs.
Okay.
By the way, I do not have.
Thank you.
I'm not a clinician. I'm a medical educator.
Lieutenant Governor Treadwell.
Yes.
This is Dr. Colescott in Anchorage. I'm an addiction specialist, and I see addiction daily, and have done so for the past 7 years. And among adults and adolescents enrolled in treatment or heavy cannabis users, about 50% to 95% have reported cannabis withdrawal. This is a common thing that we see, and it's characterized by irritability, anger, aggression, nervousness, difficulty sleeping, decreased appetite, weight loss, depressed mood. These people are extremely hard to engage in treatment, and these withdrawal symptoms can go on for a month. This is a protracted, difficult thing to deal with, and there's no good treatment of this kind of addiction. So these are not uncommon symptoms in people who are daily users.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Colescott, and I know you also signed up to testify, and we will be calling on you shortly, and thank you for your intervention here. Ray, you'd asked a question.
I'll offer my question, because I asked them, did they know the question for a patient to self-actualize whether they have a problem, whether it be alcohol or marijuana, and I'll give you it. In either case, if a patient has to beg for another shot, has to beg for another smoke or a toke, they have a problem, and that's where the addiction is, and that's how you teach people addictions. It's very simple. It's very powerful. And it helps that person. But that's what we do here at the treatment center. We help them recognize that the loss of control, if there is loss of control, then they're taken from their children. They're taking the clothes. They're taking the shoes. They're taking the food because they're buying both marijuana and alcohol. They're taking that away from their kids. And we have to educate them about that. And so it's really a learning experience through denial and a path to wellness.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony today. I hope you stay, and if you have other things or questions, you can go forward.
I appreciate the time you allowed me to speak. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you for your service. Sharon, I want to make sure I don't mess up your name, Sharon. Is it Lindsay?
Lindley.
Just Sharon Lindley of Bethel is next.
Hi, my name is Sharon Lindley. I'm from Bethel, originally from Lenoptis. Welcome to Bethel. I grew up in this region. I have worked in the social services field since I graduated from high school and college. I hold a master's degree in community psychology, and I'm currently employed with YKHC Behavioral Health. In my position as an emergency service clinician, I deal with clients who are at risk to self, risk of harm to self and or others. I'm not speaking as a representative of YKHC. I'm speaking for myself as a community member. What I'm seeing more of is young people, young adults who are unemployed, needing our services. I'm hearing family members, particularly elder mothers and grandmothers, who fear for their safety because young adults are bullying them for extra cash. The unemployed young adults are the bullies to support their marijuana addiction. The symptoms related to psychotic disorder are also increasing in this age group. 99% of them which are addicted to marijuana.
Did you say 99% of people in this age group?
My from doing the assessment, a lot of them are addicted to cannabis. Young adults are angry when they run out of marijuana. They are disrupting the home life. The families are, leaving them from one village to another for their safety. I'm also seeing more youth as young as 12, 13-year-old, who are having a hard time at school, and it's compounded by their early experimentation with marijuana. They are missing school, and or when they are in school, they are not doing their schoolwork or they're sleeping. More and more children also are frustrated due to their parents' drug use as well. I am speaking against the regulation, legalization of marijuana because it will increase access in our region. The marijuana bootleggers will buy it in Bethel, and they in turn will bootleg it back in the village. There will be more people selling it due to the access being easier. Not only will access be easier, the regulation of marijuana will lead to stronger drugs, including heroin. Access to marijuana has nothing to do with regulation. It has to do with the cost per you get high off of it. And I don't know what the going rate is, but a joint is a lot easier for a youth to access than a bottle, $100 bottle of alcohol. So it has nothing to do with regulation. I'm advocating for the mothers and grandmothers in the village who are being bullied by their adult children to support their marijuana addiction. I'm advocating for school-age children who need to complete their education. I'm advocating for children whose parents are smoking the food that should be on their table and smoking the time that they should have in parenting. I'm advocating for young adults who want to quit drug use, but the region lacks the means and the resources to provide treatment or access to treatment. We have one treatment facility in our region, and that's where Ray Watson works. And it's one treatment facility for all 56 villages. A lot of the addictive behavior is both drugs and cannabis, and they go hand in hand. People think being stoned is better than being fueled by alcohol, but in fact, this is the ruin of the younger generation. Condoning drug use, specifically by regulation or legalizing of marijuana use, is telling our children it's okay to be stoned and not get any schoolwork done. Condoning drug use by legalizing and regulating marijuana is telling our children you will lose extra 8 hours a day due to being stoned, but that will be your success. Condoning drug use is telling our grandmothers and mothers that they are on a losing battle with their adult children who are marijuana addicts. It is also telling our community members loss of property through thievery will be the norm. The economic system in the villages is not set up to support marijuana as a recreational drug or medical marijuana drug because the job market is very low. Subsequently, drug use is creating problems. High turnover of teachers and the dropout rate is also high in our region. Unless these two social issues are not problematic, regulating and legalizing marijuana will add to the social problems and not decrease it. A lot of people who are recreational drug supporters are employed with a salary that is not in the poverty level. Majority of the people in our region are below in or below our poverty level. And that's who I'm advocating for, and I'm speaking for the people. Regulation of marijuana, again, will increase access, and another thing that one of the doctors quoted, Dr. Hinderberger, said, and I'll use his quote, the purpose of regulating and legalizing marijuana in our region will and is leading to pacifism and communist brainwashing. We don't have to wait for legalization or regulation. It's happening already.
Thank you. And Dr. Hinderberger was actually quoting a drug czar from about 50 years ago who made that statement.
Yeah. I'm just quoting what he quoted.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Another Sharon, whose name I hope not to mess up, Sharon Chikuchi. Thank you. Please come forward.
My name is Sharon Chikuchi, and I've been coming out to the Delta region for 20 years now and just living in Bethel for just this last year. I thought about passing my 3 minutes here for someone else who would be more eloquent in speaking, but I think that I have some experiences that I'm just going to stop and share. When I moved to, and maybe I'll just not say the name of the village just for their own protection, but when I moved to a village with a 13-year-old son, he came home from seventh grade and said, Mom, there are 5 kids in my class who don't smoke pot. For whatever reason, I assume he was one of those 5 at the beginning of the school year, and it's been more than 10 years. I did say to him, he said one time, he was going to quit alcohol, quit pot. He moved to Washington. He returned from Washington and said, I'm done with it. I'm not going to smoke anymore. But he said, I'm in Washington where there were dispensaries. He said it was so readily available. There was no way he personally could avoid it. He just couldn't live there and have it. You know, just to tell these stories, my daughter met someone from Colorado, and he said, oh, no, you guys should pass it. Just to see those people on the street is so funny. You really. And she said, not if you know them, not if you know what it's doing to their families. I think that question that Ms. Liz Walters had was, you know, about the kids in school. It is not about those kids in school smoking it. It's what happens to kids in school when their parents are smoking it and not making them go to bed at night, not encouraging them to learn, not sitting down with the ABCs or multiplication tables, you know, encouraging them to do homework, that kind of thing. It takes really serious active parenting, and our whole culture, you know, has often moved away from, you know, that I use that term culture to mean, I mean, modern society has moved so far away from that, that this isn't going to help. I probably had a few more things that I could say, but maybe the other ones I have concerns with the initiative as it is written, and when we were listening to that first presentation, Dr. H.
Hinterberger.
Thank you. And he was saying, well, advertising will be banned, and child-friendly edibles will be banned. And he kept using that term, it will be subject to stringent regulations, this kind of thing. I wondered, I mean, my feeling is that we ought not pass the legislation as it is written. We just ought not pass it as it is written. I think that it opens up an entire door that people are not ready to address. I'm surprised the chief of police isn't here today. I mean, because the fact is we are not ready to address it. And some of those things need to be put into effect. He said that the black market, that there's no evidence that the black market would be still thriving, but it's going to cause those people who are selling it now to close up their doors. Oh, I think I'm not going to sell it anymore and make all this so that someone else can. I don't see any reason that someone would stop selling it if they are currently selling it. And then he used that term moonshine in like to say, oh, when do you ever see anybody selling moonshine? And the fact is we call it homebrew. Sorry, but it's reality. I was teaching third grade in a village the other year, and I happened to bring a book that had drunk mother. So as I was looking through the books and I was showing a kid, oh, this one has a drunk mother, like maybe he would enjoy it, honestly. Every kid in that class turned around and said, I want to hear that book. So I said, okay, so we're not going to do second step this afternoon. I'm going to read this little book with, you know, the mother in this. It's, I don't know who publishes it, but she goes to treatment, and, it, you know, it's just written for social service purposes. But so I read that, and then I began to let them talk. Every kid, except for one, every kid had stories of their parents drinking. Not only that, these are third graders. Some of them said, I don't drink much. I only drink a little. These are third graders. And had to explain to them how a little tiny fish hook of addiction really, you know, just a little tiny fish hook, but after a while, they really are stuck on it. Oh, I was going to say my son who wanted to quit, and he said before, I'm gonna call you when I get my 90-day PIN or something, right? I told him before, too, oh, could you just go for 30 days? I'll be happy with that. But he said recently, you know, this is not going to make you happy, whatever. I'm not going to call you until I make my 90 days. And I said, that's not even fair because I'd like to hear from you before you're 45, 50. I mean, there's so many people in the village. You couldn't count people who hold positions that are drinking and smoking pot, and there's no reason to believe that making it legal is going to reduce that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker signed up is Charlotte Green. Charlotte Green, and Charlotte, please come up. And just for the record, can you state your legal name as well?
Yeah.
Just because I want to make sure that, because you've testified under both names.
Right.
But welcome.
Thank you. My legal name is Charlene Egby. My reporting name, my former reporting name, is Charlotte Green. And I'm just here to share my own story. I hear a lot of you guys saying, well, I know someone that did this, or this is something that I saw, but I can actually speak from the perspective of someone that uses marijuana on a regular basis, like regularly, and has for years. And so my marijuana story begins with alcohol. Like, I grew up like really, really way below the poverty level. I'm one of seven kids, and I was raised in a single-parent home, and I wasn't a happy kid. I was depressed probably the majority of my entire life. And so I started drinking early, like around 15 years old. And when I started, I like went hard. I would drink daily, like a lot of alcohol, way too much for, I could never drink as much as I used to today as an actual adult. And it got to the point where, I mean, this is my sister here, Jennifer. She's my little sister, and she looks up to me. And me drinking, I would say the most terrible things. I was a horrible person. I was bad. And it got to me being in college. I'm the first of seven kids. I had this opportunity to raise my family and to do something. And here I am drinking every single day to the point where I fail out of every class. Every class. I'm depressed. I'm about to lose this opportunity to go to school with myself. And, I mean, I tried weed when I was 17, 16 years old, and I didn't like it. I just didn't want to do it. And so I didn't that entire time. Instead, I wanted to drink. And so here I am in college. The drinking isn't working. I finally realized that right before my 21st birthday, when it's like, well, you're about to lose your ability to go to school, and then what are you going to do with your life? And I tried weed. And that allowed me to curb my drinking big time. I actually stopped for the first time since I started when I was 15, 16 years old. 6 years later, hardcore alcoholic, I stopped drinking because I started smoking weed. And not only that, but my transcripts from college will show I went from failing out of the entire semester to staying on the dean's list every single semester. I graduated cum laude and a semester early in spite of failing an entire semester because of my alcohol addiction. That's what marijuana did for me. I haven't stopped smoking. Every few months or so, I'll stop just to lower my tolerance, and it's not hard. I don't get the shakes. I don't get the DTs. I don't scream at anyone. It's just another thing. It's like quitting coffee. Yeah, it's a little different. It's slight adjustment, but it's nothing major. It's nothing major. I'm not going to come after my sister and scream and say all these terrible things and do these things that I am ashamed of. I'm not making an idiot out of myself. I don't do any of that stuff. And I stop regularly just to check and make sure. So I don't know what exactly anyone else that may have had their history with marijuana has done, but I know what it's done for me, and I think, honestly, it has saved my life. I think if it was an option that adults didn't think they had or didn't know that they would go to jail for trying, then maybe instead of alcohol, a legal substance, maybe they would go and say, well, maybe I'll try this thing that I know that Charlo said for her, this was her saving grace. This got her out of depression. It stopped my drinking. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm recovering. I'm always going to be recovering. But that's my story, and that's where I come from. And from someone that smoked this morning before I got on a plane at 3 o'clock in the morning to be here sitting in front of you. Three, I got up in Anchorage, got my stuff together, and here I am, sitting here talking to you, sharing my story, just so you can see this is the marijuana user. I own my own business. I'm 26 years old. I'm successful. I'm smart. I'm going places with my life. And I use weed regularly. And that's my story. That's it.
Thank you. Anna Hoffman?
Thank you. My name is Anna Hoffman. I'm a lifelong resident of Bethel, and I'm opposed to ballot measure 2. I have heard people argue that marijuana is not addictive, yet I have seen the utter dependence that arises with marijuana use. I've seen people in my community of Bethel, I've seen people in area villages, and people in my own family prioritize marijuana over other basic needs. I have been in homes that are equipped with indoor plumbing, but these homes do not receive city water and sewer services. The children in these homes are not able to bathe or flush the toilet, because that is not important. What is important in these homes is that even though there is no clean water, the parents are never without marijuana. I have seen domestic violence incidences occur where husbands are threatening, hurting, and manipulating their wives in order to spend the family's money on marijuana. I've seen the desperation of wives and children left without means for food or rent, but the husband has weed. I've seen the anger and abusiveness arise when marijuana is not available to the user, and I have seen wives and children seek emergency shelter for protection. I have seen talented young individuals with great potential become lazy, unmotivated, and lethargic adults due to the constant use of marijuana. This is very prevalent in my region. As an exception to this prevalence, I have also seen people who smoke marijuana on occasion and have functional lives. And for those individuals, it is already legal to possess 4 ounces of marijuana and up to 25 marijuana plants in your home. That liberty already exists. Ballot Measure 2, which is supported by organizations outside of Alaska, really is about making marijuana more available and increasing the number of users in Alaska in order to expand the marijuana market. The proposal would legalize and legalize the commercialization of marijuana with high THC levels and potent marijuana concentrates, and it would introduce marijuana edibles and marijuana candy to our communities. Proponents advocating for the passage of this ballot measure say legalization and commercialization of marijuana would allow governments and municipalities to tax the sale of marijuana. So they argue that if ballot measure 2 passes, then we can tax marijuana and bring in more revenue to the state. Well, the residents of Alaska recently had the opportunity to vote on a different tax initiative. And last month, Alaska's residents opposed that proposal. Increasing tax revenue is not a convincing argument. The existing challenges facing our communities are immense. Making marijuana more accessible and essentially experimenting with the residents of our towns, our cities, and our villages to promote the sale of marijuana concentrates and marijuana edibles to our families is careless. I oppose ballot measure 2, and I encourage everyone to vote no. Mana makwani jingu matret asinretok, huinga jingu manretaka, tamak jitu jingu masko manretaka, botarek tukufji, hoyana nituk niluji. I do have a question.
Thank you.
I've heard that from the pro side, the argument that alcohol use goes down when marijuana is legalized. And besides the personal story just shared by Ms. Green, is there any other proof for that claim?
Dr. Henneberger, would you like to respond?
I didn't say that alcohol use does go down when marijuana is legalized. It really hasn't. An opportunity to observe that situation anywhere in the world. There are some studies of people who have been who have reduced their use of alcohol, who have substituted some alcohol use for some marijuana use. I don't have the details handy. We'll try to find those for you.
So it sounds like essentially you replace one substance with another.
You replace a harmful substance with a less harmful substance. That's the important thing.
Lieutenant Governor, can I just point out to something that was included for the record in the Anchorage hearing?
Yes, Christina, please go ahead.
So we on the no side took that statement around replacing, and when you look at the tax revenue in Colorado of alcohol versus marijuana after legalization, the tax sales for alcohol actually increased after legalization occurred. So, you know, while we don't have a scientific study, there is at least a social experiment there, as it were, to say that perhaps that's not the case since the sale of alcohol increased during the period of time where marijuana was legalized.
Thank you.
I'm going to, it's not really a comment, but a question. This is the third rural community where we've had this hearing. We've had one in Nome and one in Barrow. And the testimony in those two other rural communities suggested legalization of marijuana would help reduce domestic violence. And here the testimony has run the opposite direction. And I don't know if the pro and the con side want to weigh in on that, on studies, and you know, as we wind up our hearing or not, but it's a very different contrast that I've heard here today. So I just only note that as you know, for the record, if there's information that any side wants to provide, we're very happy to make it available for the public record. Jennifer McPherson had said maybe you want to testify.
Maybe, and I absolutely will.
Thank you. Please come forward.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jennifer McPherson. I am a counselor at the Town Treatment Center. I am also a very, very concerned mother of seven. I'm also a college graduate. I'm also a recovering drug addict. I am a polysubstance recovering drug addict who's been clean for over 9 years and am now paying it forward. I do have something that I did want to say. I wanted to say to Ms. Green, I appreciate your testimony and your courage. I can appreciate. It is my own opinion that you are very much an exception and not the rule as far as it comes to people who have regular drug use, and especially in this community. But I do commend your dedication and your courage. I also wanted to say that, you know, like some other members of our community, I also found Dr. H's comments regarding the we don't see moonshine being sold on the corners. You know, perhaps where the good doctor lives, that's so. That does happen here in Alaska. So for presentation that's being made for somebody who's outside of Alaska, and that one comment, in my opinion, totally negates everything in that presentation, because that shows that that presentation was made for an area that is not here. I came from downstate. I'm not native, but I love this community so much. I haven't been here long. It's just been a year and a half. But I know I'm going to retire here. I might visit, but this is my home. The moonshine thing really needs to put it into perspective for Alaskan community members, because we cannot go based on something that's made for down there. We're not down there. There are psychological symptoms of addiction, especially with withdrawal. As a former pot smoker myself, somebody who was very much with one, my former partners have all been very addicted to marijuana. There was physical violence if they didn't get their fix. If they were a couple days out, the kids had to suffer. You know, that's not right for the kids to have to suffer all that. Something that some people don't know, the human brain is not fully developed until the age of 25. That's a pretty significant age. And so just because something comes into our home doesn't mean that the children are not restricted access to it. Parents work, especially during the summer when the kids are home. So for the marijuana or whatever to be locked up in the bedroom, kids are kids. They're going to get into it. Kids are curious. One of the good doctors said something about a 15% addiction rate to teenagers who smoke marijuana once in a while, and that it jumps up to 25 to 50% if they become regular users. We're also going to have to look into the fact that Alaska is going to have to put a huge amount of money into the prevention of this addiction, just the same as the prevention of alcohol, just the same as the prevention of nicotine, just the same as the prevention of gambling addiction. We're going to have
preventative maintenance and all that kind of stuff, treatment funds available to the people who succumb to this. A 50% addiction rate? That's insane. I promise you, regular drug users such as I was in the past, it does not make me proud to say this. There were times I did not put diapers on my children so I could get my drugs. There were times I did not feed the children 3 meals a day. I cut back to 2. I'm sorry, I'm being emotional, because I needed my drugs. You know, I deal with that. But I'm seeing that in our community. I can't tell you how many times these issues have shown up as a counselor in my office from clients. These are real life issues. And I'm going to keep paying it forward because our community needs it, because my heart needs it, because my children deserve it. Sometimes as parents, we make sacrifices. Well, not sometimes, all the time. As parents, we have to make sacrifices for our children. This needs to be one of them. This needs to be one of them. If we're pot smokers, I'm not anymore, but this needs to be one of them. Children first. Our children first. Our elders first. We need to come second. And I hope that the state is very much going to be putting all that money into prevention and treatment and management of all this stuff. It's going to be a lot more money than they think it's going to be. They need to take the money, take a good look at how much money is being spent on prevention for nicotine, prevention for alcohol, and equivalent the same amount of money toward prevention and treatment for cannabis as well. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your courage.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone else here in the room who'd like to testify? Would you like to come?
No, I had a question. Just a question that I just got.
Sure. Please come forward.
My name is Elizabeth Ivan again, and I went to Seattle for a conference, tribal conference. I can't remember exactly what the name was. But I remember I went to a substance abuse session, and they were showing us slides of places in Colorado. Their homeowners make marijuana, the THC levels, and they use butane, hash oil. And there's been explosions that we've seen coming from making marijuana. And I was wondering, is there... like in Colorado, has there been higher rates where, you know, it doesn't make sense just because they can make it, they endanger other lives, because when it blows up, it also blows up other areas, other homes, and those are the people that are affected. Is there a comparison of explosions in those, in that state compared to other states?
Let me pose the question first. Do either the sponsor or the opponent group want to answer the question about explosions in Colorado and fires in Colorado?
Compared to where it's not legal in other states.
Christina or Tim?
Sure. What I've read and what we've seen in the news, and this is what we can rely on, is that there have been 31 butane hash oil explosions in Colorado. Something that I read a while back, there are manufacturing facilities in California, and I can find this article for you and submit it for the record, but in California where they manufacture butane hash oil, they have medical marijuana only, that roughly half of the manufacturing plants or places that they use it have resulted in fire or explosion. But I'll have to find that article for you.
Okay, thank you. And I was wondering, is there any explosions reported in Alaska at butane hash oil?
I don't know that. I think it's a fairly new part of the industry.
Maybe that's a question for Major Casanovas.
Oh.
Major Casanovas, do you have any record of explosions here in the state? And I know, you know, the State Fire Marshal Office and the Department of Public Safety, as you are, but... I don't know if you would have that information.
I'm not aware of any, Lieutenant Governor.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, I'm not here to take a side, one side or the other, and I've said no cussing, so I can't quote the Deputy Fire Chief of Denver who addressed the fire chiefs statewide last week in Kenai as I did, but he used a lot of cuss words to describe the problem in Colorado of explosions, and I can put you in touch with him if you'd like.
Okay, and one other question I would have is, were those 31 explosions, did they happen during the time it was legalized, and is that a result of legalization? Was there explosion before the legalization?
Christina, did you the 31 episodes you testified to are in the last year since legalization, is that correct?
They're since January, since legalization, yes.
Okay. And
legalization of recreational marijuana.
Yeah. I'm going to stipulate, based on testimony that we've heard around the state, that there is manufacture of butane hash oil in the state now, today. There have been some. I don't know how many, but we heard from a chief of police, I believe in Nome, from Nome and the Anchorage hearing about some issues. And the question of whether or not the legalization would mean it goes up or down is up for you to decide. Another question related to that, and Tim, let me just ask you, do you see any method to restrict the home brew of concentrates, so to speak, with legal marijuana in your bill, or would that be supportive or not supportive of the intent of the bill?
Lieutenant Governor, the bill, of course, does not directly address what people do in their homes with marijuana that they may purchase legally under the initiative. I simply want to point out, it just seems to me to stand to reason, that if people can buy concentrates that have been produced in a regulated, well-controlled, inspected facility, as they would be under this initiative, people would have no reason to try to manufacture them in their home.
I'd like to add a couple things, but I apologize. I'm trying to pull up the language of the ballot measure. But the ballot measure language itself does protect the processing of this. The language included in there under what would be allowed is specifically included in there, and that would include the manufacture of butane hash oil. Now, I will say that the sale of concentrates are more expensive, and one of the things that they have seen in Colorado is that, you know, because the black market is continuing to thrive, part of that reason is the price point. So in Colorado, the 31 explosions took place after these concentrates were made available. So I think that we can probably question the validity of, just because it's available in a dispensary, that they would not happen.
Okay. Thank you both. And if either side has got more information on that issue that you'd like to contribute to the website, please let us know. We have three people online who have said that they'd like to testify, and I'm first going to call Dr. Coluscott. If you're still on the line, I didn't get your first name, and I'd like to get that too.
Hi, Lieutenant Governor Treadmill. I am not able to participate right now. My clinic has just started, but I will hopefully be in on the next initiative discussion.
Okay, and that will be in Fairbanks later this week. And if you let me know, we can probably let you on earlier. And I apologize.
Oh, that'll be great. I'll try to do that. I'm so sorry. Bye-bye.
No problem. Thank you. Ruth Shane LeBen. And I have probably mangled your name badly. Ruth, are you still online? Okay. Rachel Petro with the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Can you hear me okay?
Very well, thank you.
great. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I apologize. I was online for over 2 hours last week for the MATSU hearing and had to leave for a meeting. So happy to have the opportunity today. The Alaska Chamber represents businesses from all across Alaska, from Barrow to Ketchikan. We also serve to represent local chambers across the state as well, including the Bethel Chamber. We do oppose Ballot Measure 2, which is the act to tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana. And the main reason why is we believe it will negatively affect workforce safety, readiness, and productivity, as well as increase employer liability. So I just want to go through some of the reasons our members decided to oppose Ballot Measure 2. And I will just note that as an issue that is purported to be about commerce, it was a very deliberate position that we took, because generally we are supportive of commerce in diversifying Alaska's economy. Specifically, we are concerned that there's no uniform or scientifically valid test that can be administered to determine how intoxicated someone is by marijuana. And without those appropriate standards and testing available, like there is for alcohol, there's really no way to ensure workforce safety, readiness, or productivity. Currently, workers' comp in Alaska are the highest in the nation. Testing and evaluation standards for determining the physiological states of an employee's level of impairment simply don't exist today. There's no way to quantify or limit employer liability associated with legal marijuana use outside the workplace. Additionally, and I think you've heard some concern about this today, the initiative does not allow Alaska's communities the ability to regulate cultivation, possession, consumption, and transportation of marijuana locally, as many of them do with alcohol. And the proposed initiative is certainly different, although it may be nuanced, and I've heard in testimony these nuances back and forth, but ultimately it's not. As proposed in this initiative, communities would not be able to regulate marijuana like they do alcohol. One of our biggest commerce concerns is that the initiative fails to regulate personal cultivation in a manner that ensures the commercialization of marijuana for the benefit of Alaska's economy. The initiative defines marijuana very broadly and without the limits recently enacted after the initiative passed in Colorado in November of 2012. Just note that within 6 months of Colorado's law going into effect, its legislature advanced a measure to broaden a ban on certain types of edible marijuana and then limits for concentrated forms of marijuana due to serious health and safety concerns. Some final thoughts, and I appreciate, again, the time. The one thing that's been made clear to me as I've listened to testimony throughout Alaska is that this proposed law does not address Alaska's needs or wants. And so I would just say, vote no on 2. What is the rush? If Alaska is going to commercialize marijuana, let's do it in a thoughtful manner and make sure that our communities have the ability to have that local control. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify? Let me thank all of you for coming. Oh, ma'am, please come forward. Rachel, thank you for your testimony.
My name is Barbara Liu, and I have lived in this region all my life. And I went to college where I was away for about 7 years, 7 to 10 years. But I have lived here most of my life, and what I have a question on this initiative is the elder earlier mentioned that Inupiaq, that there would be no tolerance for the possession and over if the over a legal amount. And so on. Those questions need to be answered. I think, like, for example, I think I
want to say that alcohol has been illegal here to sell, and marijuana has been illegal to sell. And so if you're caught and put in jail for having an illegal possession of marijuana or alcohol, transporting it to a village, what are the consequences?
Thank you. So I guess the question, let me ask the sponsor first, Dr. Hinderberger. What is the consequence of bringing marijuana to a village where the community has chosen under local control provisions not to allow that?
Well, again, as we stated several times, personal possession of marijuana in the home in small quantities is constitutionally protected by the Supreme Court. They made that ruling because, in their view, marijuana is less harmful to the individual and to the community than is alcohol. The more I can
I understand that. And so, Barbara, what he's saying is that in terms of personal possession, I'll agree with Dr. Hinderberger, had he come to me to put a law on the ballot that said you could prohibit possession, I would have had to reject the initiative. So that's why I assume he didn't do it. He may have other reasons, or his group may have had other reasons, but because our Supreme Court, under the Raven decision, said you can keep quantities, he did that. But I don't think that was your question. I think your question was, if somebody is in the process of suppose this bill passes, and suppose the neighboring village here of Akiak decides it does not want to allow marijuana manufacture, growth, or sale, okay? Under the Raven decision, as today, somebody can bring a personal a substance to it. I don't know what the tribal rule is, but the individual can. And your question is, if somebody brings enough to sell, what's the penalty? And Dr. Hinderberger, I don't see in your law that you address new penalties. Would you be relying on the old penalties there, or would you look at the community to develop penalties under the same rules of Section 1738.110 there, though I find that most of what's there is gives them power to gives communities only power to regulate the dispensaries. So if I'm phrasing your question right, Barbara, the question is, what's the penalties for breaking the law if we do get local control here?
It would be up to the locality. If you impose local control, and again, the initiative would not protect transport in commercial quantities, if that's a question that's being asked.
So it would be, it's not even addressed? That's a local control, or is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that you're asking, what I got from the Lieutenant Governor was asking about the penalties that would be imposed under a local control rule.
See, okay, so just looking here at the bill, it says a local government may, and this is section 17.38.110, a local government may establish civil penalties, not criminal penalties, okay, for violation of an ordinance or regulation governing the time, place, and manner of a marijuana establishment. So, in other words, if they are growing it for sale or selling it, the local government can have a civil penalty, but not a criminal penalty. Is that your understanding, Dr. Hinderberger, or would a criminal penalty
that
may exist on the books today stay on the books?
I'm not sure that's applying to the local option situation. I'd have to look at the initiative language. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, well, it's from your local control section of the bill. So Okay, well, let me say this, Barbara. What we've done in cases like this is we've said to both sides, if there's a question they can't answer, they can provide it for the record later, and we put it on the website. And our website is notice.alaska.gov. I'm going to ask Major Casanovas today, if there is someone transporting or selling in a village, there's a criminal law that does apply. Is that correct?
Yes, Lieutenant Governor, that is correct, and that's generally based on the quantity of drug involved.
Okay, and if you're making an arrest under the criminal law, is that under a statewide law, or will you also, or will law enforcement also, are there specific local ordinances that criminalize the bootlegging, for example, of alcohol today?
I think that Bob Beasley would have to answer whether there are municipal laws or village laws about the alcohol piece, but from a state perspective, you know, the state troopers would enforce the importation of and sale of, the illegal importation and sale of drugs and or alcohol, and there are current penalties for those in state statute. Yes, sir.
Okay, and in this particular law, do you see anything that takes away those penalties?
I do not. But as we have discussed at least one other teleconference, if this initiative were to pass, we would be very heavily relying upon the Department of Law to try to merge the definitions and the language of this initiative against the current statutes to see how many of those might need to be revised as well.
So as an example, under the draft bill in front of us, section 17.38060, where it says marijuana accessories authorized, the headline says notwithstanding any other provision of law, it is lawful and shall not be an offense under Alaska law or the law of any political subdivision in Alaska. So your village, or your first class city, or be a basis for seizure or forfeiture of assets under Alaska law for persons 21 years of age or older to manufacture, possess, or purchase marijuana accessories or distribute or sell marijuana accessories. So the point being is that this outlaws the local option on head shops. You could not outlaw the sale of pipes and paraphernalia as many cities, large and small, have now across the state. So it takes away some of those penalties. There was something else on seizures in the law, which I don't have right in front of me. So at any rate, I'm going to leave your question open as one that both sides may want to comment on.
Okay.
Thank you. And I'm sorry we couldn't give you a simple answer.
Yeah, I know it sounds very complicated. I know it's been a complicated process, but I've also read a little bit about the synthetic marijuana, and that's something that really concerns me. It was meant to be pharmaceutical, and it became illegal. And in this area, we haven't had enough resources to help people with all this influx of narcotics, alcohol, the chemical dependencies. So, and I work as an interpreter at most board meetings at the Health Corporation. We just don't have enough resources. I'm sorry. So I oppose this because I believe it will, we have the resources in the local control to battle it, like Mike Williams said earlier. We're taking it on. We're helping our people. And I know a little bit about money, and so I'm really concerned, you know, like the cigarette tax goes towards education. Some of it goes to education. And we don't know where this is going.
That's correct. And I should also state for the record, because this is a law by initiative, an initiative cannot appropriate the money that's raised by the tax. So had they tried to commit it to education or some other, or to drug rehabilitation or anti-addiction or any of those possibilities as it did in Colorado, it would not have been legal under our Constitution. So that issue is up to the legislature if this passes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments before we close the hearing?
I do have a couple questions.
Please come forward. Charlotte Green with some questions.
So I know a lot of you guys are concerned about alcohol and all of this. And so I wanted to ask Christina what exactly your role is in the Fat Ptarmigan.
Well, as a personal business, I am. My husband and I are one of four sets of owners of the restaurant in Anchorage.
Does this restaurant also sell alcohol?
It does. It sells beer and wine.
Do you sell alcohol to pregnant women?
I guess it would be. I don't think you're allowed to ask people what their current natal situation is. So I have no idea.
Yes.
I didn't.
Okay. So would you be willing to stop selling alcohol in your bar?
Charlo, I understand what you're doing, and the continued personal attacks are noted. I get that. I also get your motivation for your business. That's acknowledged by myself and many others. I think if the ballot measure were about the sale of alcohol, I think it would be appropriate to answer that. But I am not going to stand for you to continue to bully me and my business and my family. So I think I will decline to answer. Thank you.
So you're not willing to stop selling alcohol in your bar, but you say that you are doing all of this for Alaska's children. And we all know alcohol is the most toxic substance that has hit our state. I just think,
Charlo, I think if you'll allow me to answer, if there's a question, I'll answer a question.
Yeah.
Is there a question? So the question is, I think that one of the things that you should perhaps consider is the testimony by the many local people, elders, community leaders who just testified. And nobody is saying that
alcohol.
And nobody is saying alcohol isn't dangerous. They're also saying that they see significant impacts to their community by many substances, including marijuana. And I think it's important that we respect all Alaskans' input on this matter, which is why we're having these state hearings. And I just encourage you to respect the opinions of others in the room, others that have testified. Statewide, I think that we all need to have a discussion about this, and that's why it's so important. But continuing to attack me personally, which also attacks every single Alaskan who has signed on opposing ballot measure 2 and who has testified across the state of their concerns and questions, I don't think that's a conversation that we as Alaskans should be having.
I just think it's important that people know exactly who is funding the No on 2 campaign and that they know it is you.
Oh.
Big alcohol.
We've
only received donations from Alaskans, individuals, and businesses. We've never received a donation from anybody remotely in the alcohol industry. On the contrary, all but $2,000 on the Yes campaign has been received by the Marijuana Policy Project to advocate for an industry, a commercial industry, that will legalize the substance to all of Alaska, and their members do, in fact, make money off of this industry.
Okay, and I'll just stipulate for the record that the Alaska Public Office Commission 30-day report will be due and public very quickly, and you'll be able to see who's contributed on the pro side and who's contributed on the con side.
Okay.
And we have one other question. Thank you very much for your question.
This is Dr. Hindenburg. I'd simply like to rebut something that Christina just said. The Marijuana Policy Project nor its members stand to benefit from marijuana legalization. The Marijuana Policy Project is actually a fairly small nonprofit organization with an annual budget of less than $3 million. And if you think about what they're doing here, they're trying to put themselves out of business. Once marijuana is legal, there will be no more Marijuana Policy Project.
I absolutely disagree, and I think that what they have stated in their executive director has said they don't care about Alaska. Most people don't care about Alaska. So I think it's, I respectfully decline to say that they do care about Alaska, and I think that Alaskans should come together to resolve the issue around medical marijuana that we as Alaskans have an obligation to address.
Thank you. We have one other question.
Thank you.
Can you state your name again for the record?
This is Sharon Chakuchin, and earlier today what was in my mind, having looked at what was in the legislative thing the other day, when I got up to testify, all that went out of my head. The testimonies that I have heard personally, including Ms. Green's, is basically that pot was good for me and that there's a movement that they'd like to be able to freely buy it and sell it without it being illegal. That's my understanding, that the argument is that it's pot. Basically, that pot has been helpful and it shouldn't be illegal. It should be able to be bought and sold.
That I shouldn't be or have to be a criminal to, yeah.
Criminalized. Okay. So, considering I have neighbors who smoke pot every single night, and I understand that's their personal preference, my major concern is that the legislation that was passed in Colorado, they hightailed it to revise it and include stipulations that kind of backtrack, that while you are saying we think that, I'm just going to call it pot smoking, should be decriminalized, selling it and buying it. I can understand that. But that the legislation is written in a way, and this is a real question, but so doesn't that make dabbing, for example, just as legal, the way the legislation is currently written?
This is an issue that came up in a number of hearings, and one of the questions Christina, I want to be as fair as I can in characterizing this. There's a definition, there is a section in the bill that says you can possess, use, display, purchase, or transport 1 ounce or less of marijuana or no more than 6 marijuana plants. And so the law up here would say you can have 1 ounce or less of marijuana. Then in the definitions of marijuana, it says marijuana means all parts of the plant. And every compound, manufacturer, salt, derivative, mixture, or preparation, which could include earwax or shatter or butane hash oil or that sort of thing. Now, I will say this. Dr. Hinderberger has testified, and other proponents of the bill have testified, that their intent was that the 1 ounce of the green leafy substance is the maximum amount. And if it takes 10 plants to make one little jar of dab or shatter, you can't have that much. You can only have the composition of 1 ounce. And Dr. Hinderberger, if I've mischaracterized it, that's the way I've heard you testify in several different hearings. The con side has said, nope, the plain reading of the law says 1 ounce of the green plant, but then defines the plant as maybe even the concentrate. And so the point is the concentrates are allowed under the law. The manufacturer concentrates is allowed under this proposal. And the question of how much will either be a conflict in the law that would be settled by the courts or regulation or by subsequent legislation. Because, we couldn't find a clear – while we were told what the intent was, I can't stand up after hearing 7 hearings and tell you exactly how much concentrate you can possess under this proposed law. And Dr. Hinderberger and Christina, if you I'm not trying to be unfair. I'm just trying to say that this is an issue that's come up in several other hearings, and we've heard different answers. That's all. Yeah.
And did you want
us
to say anything? Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Dr. Hinderberger. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Christina.
I guess, that's part of the question that we have in the opposition side is the very vague well, kind of protected and specific language, but then also it's a pretty short ballot measure, the language, and what we have seen in Colorado is that concentrate definition in terms of the weight is not does not apply, so it's just an ounce. And I do believe that under the definition of our state constitution and a ballot measure that we could not, that the definition of marijuana would potentially be considered a substantive change, and that we would be open to, it would be considered a repeal, and we'd be open to legal course of action. So that's all that I understand it to be. But in Colorado, a concentrate is considered part of the definition as it is in this measure.
So I don't think either side is questioning whether or not concentrates are allowed under this proposed law. There are. The question is how much could you have. And actually, maybe Major Casanovas, do you have anything to add on this? Today, if you encounter an individual with a small amount of plain leafy substance, does a concentration of, or, you know, how much concentrate do you need to have before you are seen as violating the law today?
Well, the current definition of marijuana today does not include concentrates. They're in a completely different schedule. They are 3As, not 6As. And so if this were to pass with this definition, that's one of the conflicts we have with current statute. The dilemma this puts law enforcement in, much like we're having this discussion about whether it's just an ounce of green leafy material or is it an ounce of the hash oil, is that 1 ounce then net weight, or is it potentially a fluid ounce? So there are still many things that need to be fine-tuned in the way of the regulations and the interpretations of this if it passes.
So then why not fine-tune the initiative and write an initiative that is requesting what you actually want and not include all this Pandora's box of things that, you know, are on a different scale. What was that word? The rating scale. So the magnitude of the drug. Why include writing that opens up that?
Oh, this is,
okay, so the question's been asked of the pro side from someone on the con side. Dr. Interberger, do you want to try to answer, or do you want, or Charlotte, would you like to answer?
No.
Charlotte didn't draft the legislation.
I didn't. The guy on the phone is the one that wrote it. I just know that it's time, that this is the initiative to get it done.
Okay. And Dr. Interberger, do you know why you did include the concentrates in that manner, or was that?
It seems to me that it's a matter that can easily be addressed through regulation. I think we're seeing attempts to, again, exaggerate the harms, exaggerate the problems posed by concentrates. There's no reason to think that we cannot have regulations that would, for instance, stipulate possession of a proportionately smaller amount of concentrates. It really seems like a simple issue, and I kind of get the feeling it's being blown out of proportion.
Thank you.
So I guess I have kind of a question, but more of a statement. I believe that this measure was drafted. They mirrored the ballot measure out of Colorado, and that the Marijuana Policy Project had a hand in both measures. And what we've seen in Colorado is that the weight, it's an ounce is an ounce is an ounce, regardless of the substance there. And because of the language being included explicitly in this ballot measure to, you know, around the definition of any form of marijuana, and it doesn't talk about relative concentration or substance in addition to the edibles, that these would be virtually impossible to change or delete because you can only regulate up to what is legislated, and this is legislation.
Okay, thank you. We have one other question here before we close the hearing.
Well, my question to you.
And can you state your name again for the record,
yeah,
please?
My name is Sharon Lindley. My question is to you, Lieutenant, is is your purpose in coming to Bethel to get a general sense of the people's pro or con?
Actually, we'll get the exact sense of the people's pro or con on Election Day.
Okay.
I'll tell you what came behind these hearings. There was a law passed by the legislature in 2010, and this was after several initiatives that were complex initiatives. One of them had to do with cruise ship tax. One of them had to do with regulating mining, large-scale mines. So one of them had to do with a reserves tax, where several legislators, enough legislators, wanted a process whereby you go around the state, the lieutenant governor would go around the state and hold hearings. And I've said all along that we try to accomplish three things in the hearings. We try to make sure that the bill is understood. We give people the chance to say pro or con, because you're not convincing me, you're convincing others in the room or others in society. And we want to make sure that the intent language is, the intent of what the bill says is explained, because that happens a lot in a legislative hearing down in the Capitol. Somebody may put a piece of line that's legal gibberish that, you know, you and I wouldn't understand, but then somebody testifies and says, if we write this bill this way, it's going to make the speed limit 30 miles an hour in school zones, or something like that. And throughout these hearings, we've had now seven around the state. I've heard lots of pro and con arguments. We've given everybody as much an attempt at equal time as we can and made sure their questions are answered. I can tell you we've learned a lot about this bill, about some things that are in it, some things that are not in it. We've learned about how it would affect local control. We also had lots of testimony about health effects and societal effects. And as I mentioned earlier, on the North Slope in Northwest Alaska, people argued for pot legalization as a way to reduce domestic violence. Here I heard opposite arguments. And the offer I made, which is if there are studies or further testimony, put that on the record. So I feel these hearings have accomplished three things. We've helped people understand what's in the bill. We've gotten a legislative record for the bill that if there's a legal case later on, you have it. And we've given voice to Alaskans to argue one side or the other.
Yeah, and I guess, and I thank you for being here, but just my comment that I think what you've heard from here this afternoon is a resounding con against this regulating of marijuana, with one exception, and she's not even from our region. So I would really encourage you to take that back to Juno.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This hearing will become part of and is part of the public record. And, almost any law in the books in that great booklet is, you know, there is a record of the law, and this Legislative Information Office here in Bethel helps make that happen. I'd like to thank the LIO for hosting us today. I'd like to say that if you want to add more on the record on marijuana, our last hearing is scheduled tomorrow at 4 to 6 p.m. in Fairbanks at the Assembly Chambers of the borough. And you can call in and listen at 855-463-5009. And we will have a hearing here in about 20 minutes on, a little less than 20 minutes now, on the minimum wage issue, if you would like to be part of that hearing. And I want to thank you all for attending today, and I want to thank everyone for your civility and the respect that you've given others. God bless you.